This place sure has changed, he said. Yeah, it's more grown up. They both reached for their waters at the same time. Donald smiled and held his glass up. 15 years to the day that your father made the mistake of extending your curfew. Helen smiled and tapped her glass against his. To 15 more, she said. They took sips. If this place keeps up, we won't be able to afford to eat here in 15 years, Donald said. Helen laughed. She had barely changed since that first date. Or maybe it was because the changes were so subtle. It wasn't like coming to a restaurant every 5 years and seeing the leaps all at once. It was how siblings aged rather than distant cousins. You fly back in the morning? Helen asked. Yeah, but to Boston. I have a meeting with the senator. Why Boston? He waved his hand. He's having one of those nano-treatments of his. I think he stays locked up in there for a week or so at a time. He still somehow gets his work done. Yeah, by having his minions go out of their way. We're not his minions, Donald said, laughing. To come kiss his ring and leave gifts of myrrh. Come on, it's not like that. I just worry that you're pushing yourself too hard. How much of your free time are you spending on this project of his? A lot, he wanted to say. He wanted to tell his wife how grueling the hours were, but he knew how she would react. It's not as time-consuming as you'd think. Really? Because it seems like it's the only thing I hear you talking about. I don't even know what else it is you do. Their waiter came past with a tray full of drinks and said it would be just a moment longer. Helen studied the menu. I'll be done with my portion of the plans in another few months, he told her. And then I won't bore you with it any more. Honey, you don't bore me. I just don't want him taking advantage of you. This isn't what you signed up for. You decided not to become an architect, remember? Otherwise, you could have stayed home. Baby, I want you to know, he dropped his voice, this project we're working on is... It's really important, I know. You've told me, and I believe you. And then in your moments of self-doubt, you admit that your part in the entire scheme of things is superfluous anyway and will never be used. Donald forgot they'd had that conversation. I'll just be glad when it's done, she said. They can truck the fuel rods through our neighborhood for all I care. Just bury the whole damn thing and smooth the dirt over and stop talking about it. This was something else. Donald thought about the phone calls and emails he'd been getting from the district, all the headlines and fear-mongering over the route the spent rods would take from the port as the truck skirted Atlanta. Every time Helen heard a peep about the project, all she could likely think of was him wasting his time on it rather than doing his real job, or the fact that he could have stayed in Savannah and done the same work. Helen cleared her throat. So, she hesitated. Was Anna at the job site today? She peered over the lip of her glass, and Donald realized, in that moment, what his wife was really thinking when the CADFAC project and the fuel rods came up. It was the insecurity of him working with her, of being so far from home. No, he shook his head. No, we don't really see each other. We sent plans back and forth. Mick and I went, just the two of us. He's coordinating a lot of the materials and crews. The waiter arrived, pulled his black folio from his apron, and clicked his pen. Can I start you off with drinks? Donald ordered 2 glasses of the house Merlot. Helen declined the offer of an appetizer. Every time I bring her up, she said, once their waiter had angled off toward the bar, you mention Mick. Stop changing the subject. Please, Helen, can we not talk about her? Donald folded his hands together on the table. I've seen her once since we started working on this. I set it up so that we didn't have to meet because I knew you wouldn't like it. I have no feelings for her, honey. Absolutely none. Please.
This is our night.
Is working with her giving you second thoughts?
Second thoughts about what? About taking on this job? Or about being an architect?
About anything? She glanced at the booth he should have reserved.
No. God, no.
Honey, why would you even say something like that? The waiter came back with their wine. He flipped open his black notebook and eyed the two of them.
Have we decided?
Helen opened her menu and looked from the waiter to Donald.
I'm going to get my usual, she said.
She pointed to what had once been a simple grilled cheese sandwich with fries that now involved fried green heirloom tomatoes, Gruyere cheese, a honey mapled glaze, and matchstick frites with tartare.
And for you, sir?
Donald looked over the menu. The conversation had him flustered, but he felt the pressure to choose and to choose swiftly.
I think I'm going to try something different, he said, picking his words poorly.
Chapter 12. The Year 2110, Silo 1. Silo 12 was collapsing, and by the time Troy and the others arrived, the communication room was awash in overlapping radio chatter and the stench of sweat. Four men crowded around a comm station, normally manned by a single operator. The men looked precisely how Troy felt, panicked, out of their depth, ready to curl up and hide somewhere. It had a calming effect on him. Their panic was his strength. He could fake this. He could hold it together. Two of the men wore sleep shirts, rather than their orange coveralls, suggesting that the late shift had been woken up and called in. Troy wondered how long Silo 12 had been in trouble before they finally came and got him.
What's the latest? Saul asked an older gentleman who held a headphone to one ear.
The gentleman turned, his bald head shining in the overhead light, sweat in the wrinkles of his brow, his white eyebrows high with concern.
I can't get anyone to answer the server, he said.
Give us just the feeds from 12, Troy said, pointing to one of the other three workers.
A man he had met just a week ago pulled off his headset and flipped a switch. The speakers in the room buzzed with overlapping shouts and orders. The others stopped what they were doing and listened. One of the other men, in his 30s, cycled through dozens of video feeds. It was chaos everywhere. There was a shot of a spiral staircase crammed with people pushing and shoving. A head disappeared, someone falling down, presumably being trampled as the rest moved on. Eyes were wide with fear, jaws clenched or shouting.
Let's see the server room, Troy said.
The man at the controls typed something on his keypad. The crush of people disappeared and was replaced with a calm view of perfectly still cabinets. The server casings and the grating on the floor throbbed from the blinking overhead lights of an unanswered call.
What happened? Troy asked.
He felt unusually calm.
Still trying to determine that, sir.
A folder was pressed into his hands. A handful of people gathered in the hallway, peering in. News was spreading, a crowd gathering. Troy felt a trickle of sweat run down the back of his neck, but still that eerie calmness, that resignation to this statistical inevitability. A desperate voice from one of the radios cut through the rest, the panic palpable.
They're coming through! Damn it, they're bashing down the door! They're gonna get through!
Everyone in the comm room held their breath, all the jitters and activity ceasing as they listened and waited. Troy was pretty sure he knew which door the panicked man was talking about.
The lone door stood between the cafeteria and the airlock. It should have been made stronger.
A lot of things should have been made stronger.
I'm on my own up here, guys. They're going to get through. Holy shit, they're going to get through.
Is that a deputy? Troy asked. He flipped through the folder. There were status updates from Silo 12's IT head. No alarms. 2 years since the last cleaning. The fear index was pegged at an 8 the last time it had been measured. A little high, but not too low.
Yeah, I think that's a deputy, Saul said.
The man at the video feed looked back at Troy.
Sir, we're going to have a mass exodus.
The radios are locked down, right?
Saul nodded. We shut down the repeaters. They can talk among themselves, but that's it.
Troy fought the urge to turn and meet the curious faces peering in from the hallway.
Good, he said.
The priority in this situation was to contain the outbreak. Don't let it spread to neighboring cells. This was a cancer. Excise it. Don't mourn the loss. The radio crackled.
They're almost in! They're almost in! They're almost in!
Troy tried to imagine the stampede, the crush of people, how the panic had spread. The order was clear on not intervening, but his conscience was muddled. He held out a hand to the radio man.
Let me speak to him, Troy said.
Heads swiveled his way. A crowd that thrived on protocol sat stunned. After a pause, the receiver was pressed into his palm. Troy didn't hesitate. He squeezed the mic. Deputy?
Hello? Sheriff?
The video operator cycled through the feeds, then waved his hand and pointed to one of the monitors. The floor number 72 sat in the corner of the screen, and a man in silver overalls lay slumped over a desk. There was a gun in his hand, a pool of blood around a keyboard.
That's the sheriff? Troy asked.
The operator wiped his forehead and nodded.
Sheriff? What do I do?
Troy clicked the mic.
The sheriff is dead, he told the deputy,
surprised by the steadiness of his own voice. He held the transmit button and pondered this stranger's fate. It dawned on him that most of these silo dwellers thought they were alone. They had no idea about each other, about their true purpose. And now, Troy had made contact, a disembodied voice from the clouds. One of the video feeds clicked over to the deputy, who was gripping a handset, the cord spiraling to a radio mounted on the wall. The floor number in the corner read 1.
You need to lock yourself in the holding cell, Troy radioed, seeing that the least obvious solution was the best.
It was a temporary solution, at least.
Make sure you have every set of keys.
He watched the man on the video screen. The entire room and those in the hallway watched the man on the video screen. The door to the upper security office was just visible in the warped bubble of the camera's view. The edges of the door seemed to bulge outward because of the lens. And then the center of the door bulged inward because of the mob. They were beating the door down. The deputy didn't respond. He dropped the microphone and hurried around the desk. His hands shook so violently as he reached for the keys that the grainy camera was able to capture it. The door cracked along the center. Someone in the comm room drew in an audible breath. Troy wanted to launch into the statistics. He had studied and trained to be on the other end of this, to lead a small group of people in the event of a catastrophe, not to lead them all. Maybe that's why he was so calm. He was watching a horror that he should have been in the middle of, that he should have lived and died through. The deputy finally secured the keys. He ran across the room and out of sight. Troy imagined him fumbling with the lock on the cell as the door burst in, an angry mob forcing their way through the splintered gap in the wood. It was a solid door, strong, but
not strong enough. It was impossible to tell if the deputy had made it to safety. Not that it mattered. It was temporary. It was all temporary. If they opened the doors, if they made it out, the deputy would suffer a fate far worse than being trampled.
The inner airlock door is open, sir. They're trying to get out.
Troy nodded. The trouble had probably started in IT, had spread from there. Maybe the head, but more likely his shadow. Someone with override codes. Here was the curse. A person had to be in charge, had to guard the secrets. Some wouldn't be able to. It was statistically predictable. He reminded himself that it was inevitable. The cards already shuffled, the game just waiting to play out.